fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to the program. It is July the 21st. 21. How about that? So glad you're with me on The Cale Clark Show. Hey, why don't you give me a call? It's toll free. The call's on me. 1-888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. You can also tweet at me at Cale Clark. That's my Twitter handle. Grab onto that. Our show account is at Cale Clark Show. And you can email us, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Well, yesterday's show was really fascinating. Got a lot of run. A lot of people found it really compelling. And unfortunately, you didn't have a chance to call in yesterday to talk about it. So if you want to react to that, you can call 1-888-914-9149. We had an interview yesterday that I didn't really. This was an appearance that I made. Professor Josh Samuel, who teaches a course called The Church and Its Future at a Protestant Institute of Higher Learning, a Pentecostal school in Canada called the Master's College and Seminary, had invited me to speak to his class about the Catholic Church. So if you missed the show yesterday, you can find it on the Relevant Radio app, relevantradio.com, and the title of the show was Why Catholicism. Just go to our shows. You can find the menu, little sandwich menu bar, if you will. We'll give you any actual sandwiches to eat, but if you press on that little sandwich in the left-hand corner, you can find all the shows, and you can find our show, The Cale Clark Show, and the episode is called Why Catholicism. Really had a great conversation for Dr. Josh Samuel's class on the Catholic Church, why I'm Catholic, why I came back to the Catholic Church after being a Protestant minister for many years. And I know his students enjoyed it. They asked a lot of great questions, and I hope you enjoy that episode too. I did get an email about the show from a listener who was, where is that email? Oh, wouldn't you know it? Here it is. It's from Brian, who was listening in Mount Holly, New Jersey. And he wrote me today saying, well done, Cale. I really enjoyed listening to this episode while doing my evening walk. That's a great thing about the Relevant Radio app. You can take it with you. You covered the bases for sure. Really enjoy your show and your intellect. Thank you, Brian. I'm not sure how much of an intellect I have. My IQ is pretty low, but I try to squeeze as much out of it as I possibly can. And also, here to talk about the show, we've got someone on the line who actually works at Relevant Radio. Wanted to react to yesterday's program. Preston Alex is on the line, and he is the accounting manager here at Relevant Radio. And it just goes to show you that Relevant Radio employees do listen to the programming here. And that's actually a good sign, because if we didn't, that wouldn't be very good. You know, it's like Victor Kiam, the old Remington Razor guy. I liked it so much, I bought the company. Maybe that's what it's like here. We do listen to our own shows. And Preston, this is the first time that you and I have actually talked in person. So welcome to the show.
Fantastic. Yeah, I was impressed by the conversation you had yesterday, how you covered pretty much every major Protestant difference from the sacraments, Eucharist, papal succession, infallibility, you know, what it means to have a church. I think the only thing you didn't touch on was purgatory and Mary, but I think you got everything else crammed in there, which is pretty impressive.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, we never even broached the topic of Mary, which is really one of the big sticking points, obviously, for non-Catholics thinking about becoming Catholic. Yeah. And yeah, it was. I'm really thankful to Professor Samuel, who gave me a little shout out today on Twitter as well. So thanks for that, Dr. Samuel. He's just so open minded. He's such a great guy, and just to be able to kind of hold court with no filter and be able to talk about the Catholic Church was really, really good. And you had it. You had a couple of caveats, right, Preston? Yeah. That you wanted to share with me.
I know how short of time you had. And you had to just get into these very important topics. However, I think for most of the Protestants that might be listening to that, they might miss the why does it matter to me? Why, so what? You know, why do I need to know that? So what, you have papal succession. Why does that matter? I can go to God directly. I don't need your pope, even if you have a pope. But, you know, I think the professor tried to touch on that, saying what is the benefit that you have as being Catholic versus being Protestant, and you were still trying to work through some of these other arguments. And so I don't know if they got the full impression of why be Catholic to benefit mm-hmm. me personally. It might make sense of it being true, but why does that matter to me personally? So that's something that I just comment on and was wondering.
Well, that's a good point. Well, first of all, Preston, I would never disagree with you about anything, because as the head of the accounting department, you do sign my paycheck. So anything you say is automatically correct. But,
all right.
But no, hey, this is, by the way, that's a common a tactic I use. If I don't want to answer a question, I'll say, well, that's a really interesting question. But you know what's even more interesting is this question. Then I'll talk about something else.
Sure.
No, but in all honesty, I guess I wasn't, I might have not realized that I hadn't fully answered Professor Samuel's question there. So your point was, I think he was kind of asking at one point, you know, what's the benefit of being Catholic if it's potentially possible to get to heaven anyways as, say, a Protestant Christian, why be Catholic? Is that kind
of
what you're getting
at? That's how he kind of phrased it. And I don't think you were able to give a direct answer because there was just not a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so much we could say to that. Sure. Obviously, I would say that, first of all, just to respond to that, Preston, I would say that, first of all, if somebody knows that the Catholic Church, and this is something that Vatican II talked about, Lumen Gentium, the document on the Church, Light of the Nations, if somebody knows that the Catholic Church is founded by Christ but refuses to enter the Catholic Church, they can't be saved because they're rejecting Christ himself, because the Church is his mystical body. So obviously, in the situation that you're bringing up, and maybe that he was bringing up too, we're dealing with a situation where maybe somebody doesn't know that the Catholic Church is the true church, or maybe doesn't believe that. Mm-hmm. What benefit would there be to becoming Catholic, other than, you know, you need it for salvation if you realize that it's true? Right. There's so many things. There's so many things because, number one, to use an analogy from fast food, we have the full meal deal. We've got the Eucharist.
Right.
And you can't get that anywhere else. You can't get that anywhere else. I was actually reading an interview today with the new head of the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas in Rome. He was interviewed by, I think, the National Catholic Register. And he's in this band called the Hillbilly Thomists. I don't know if you've heard of this band, but they play bluegrass music. They're all a bunch of Dominicans. And he's now, I don't know if he's going to be cutting any more albums recently. We talked about them on the show before. But he comes from a Jewish background. And he said, really, the one thing that got me going was the Eucharist. Once I realized that the Eucharist was legit, almost every other Catholic problem that I have with respect to doctrine all kind of fell into place. So there's that. And also, I just think there's so many more helps in the Catholic Church for somebody to get to heaven. Mm-hmm. Peter Kreeft, the great Catholic philosopher and teacher, a friend of the program as well, he once used the analogy of, well, there's a couple ways we could get from, say, Chicago to Los Angeles. We could try walking there. You might get there. You could hitchhike. You might get picked up by the wrong person and wind up in a ditch somewhere. You could drive. That's a little easier. It'd still take a while. You might get in a car accident. Or you could fly. That's probably the easiest and the safest way to get there in most instances. And he said the Catholic Church is like flying, because we've got the sacraments. We've got the fullness of Christ's teaching in not only the Word of God, but also in sacred tradition as well. And we've got just all these helps that other Christians don't have. So it should be easier for you to get to your destination. I don't know if that makes any sense, Preston. But
oh, it does, absolutely. In fact, that was my favorite part of your episode yesterday, is when you talked about Peter Kreeft and how we don't claim too much authority where we're going to actually change the teaching of Christ. And you brought up divorce, and I thought that was a good little stinger to the Protestants, saying, you know, they're changing the teaching of Christ. Isn't that a problem? You didn't say that right, but that's what I heard from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we as Catholics often get accused of, you know, having too much authority over people's lives or something like this. But as Kreeft, you know, rightly pointed out, you know, changing the teaching of our Lord? Come on, who are you to think you can do that? And that's essentially what goes on in a lot of cases in the Protestant world. I know the Protestant world is a big world. Lots of different denominations out there, 33,000 at least, you know, probably more at this point in terms of denominations. But yeah, I think it's a good point. And so this is the key question, obviously. It's the question of authority. By what authority are you doing these things? That's what they asked Jesus. And so, yeah, I mean, everybody claims authority. The question is, how legitimate is what you're basing it on? So, yeah. So anyways, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate talking to you today.
Hey, well, I'm glad you called in. And it's nice to know that you're listening to the program. And once again, thanks for signing my paycheck. I really appreciate that. And
it's a joy to have you here.
Oh, it's been amazing. And by the way, yesterday was my 1 year anniversary at Relevant Radio. Can you believe that? Well,
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. A year has gone by so fast, and everybody here has been just so welcoming, and just a whole year of our two programs, The Faith Explained and The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Wow, it's just a whirlwind, but everyone has been great, including yourself, and I'm so glad that you called in, but I know you want to get back home to your family because you've already put in a hard day, so so you can maybe listen to the rest of the show in the car.
Absolutely. And All right, we'll talk later.
Well, you got it, Preston. That was Preston Alex, the accounting manager at Relevant Radio, calling in to react to a show that we did yesterday, which was a presentation recording of me speaking to a class at the Master's College and Seminary, a Protestant school in Canada, where I was invited to talk about the Catholic Church. And once again, that episode is available on demand on relevantradio.com and on the app. It's called Why Catholicism. You can find it under our show, The Cale Clark Show. And that's what you're listening to here on Relevant Radio. And if you have any questions, if you want to call in, if there's something that you heard yesterday and you want some more intel on that or want to flesh that out a little bit more, you can call 1-888-914-9149. You can also tweet your question at me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Well, we're going to take a quick break here on The Cale Clark Show. But before we do that, I want to whet your appetite for what's coming in the future in just a few minutes. Dr. Holly Ordway, another good friend of the program, has come up with a really interesting blog post about the parables of Jesus. A lot of people have questions about the parables, especially when Jesus says, "The reason I speak to them in parables is that seeing they do not perceive, and hearing they do not listen, nor do they understand." Well, if Jesus knows the crowd won't understand him, why in the world does he speak in parables then? This is an important question, and she tries to answer that, and we're going to have that coming up in just a bit. But, okay, yeah, we'll take the break now. I was going to say something else, but you've got the music going, so we'll just roll with it. All right, we'll be back in just a moment on The Cale Clark Show.
It's over. The Bucks have done it. The long wait has ended. After a half century, the Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions once again.
This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, last night, the Milwaukee Bucks won the NBA championship. Once again, as announcer Mike Breen said, as part of the ABC broadcast crew, ABC/ESPN, well, once again, it's been a while. It's been 50 years since the Milwaukee Bucks last won the chip. And we know we have a lot of listeners, a lot of fans of the program out in Milwaukee. I'm sure you are probably pretty tired after all the celebrating last night, especially if you were down in the Deer District. I can't believe it. I think 10% of the population of Milwaukee was in the Deer District, the fan area outside the Fiserv Forum in downtown Milwaukee. Well, the Bucks last won the NBA championship in 1971, 50 years ago, when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was the star of the team, along with the Big O, Oscar Robertson. So it's been 50 years. And it's kind of fitting that the star of this Milwaukee Bucks team, one of the greatest players in the league right now, Giannis Antetokounmpo, who of course is the Greek freak, he scored 50 points, so very poetic, in last night's win. Only the second person to score 50 or more in a clinching finals game. So he got a 50-piece, and then he went for a 50-piece. Yeah. After the game, he stayed up all night, did not sleep a wink, and today he posted a video on his Instagram account of his own unique celebration. He decided to go to Chick-fil-A. So here's the video that he posted. Here's some audio from that.
Oh, baby. Milwaukee.
Oh, okay. I
I got to return the trophy back to the team. I stole it. I stole the trophy from the organization. They're looking for the trophy. I got to return the trophy back. Unless I don't know the consequences. Do I get traded? You know, something? They're probably going to waive me. But, man, we did it, man.
Yeah, how about that? So, yeah, and that's what he's referring to there, is that as he's driving to Chick-fil-A, he's got the Larry O.B. there in the car with him, the Larry O'Brien trophy, which the championship, that's the championship trophy of the NBA. And he kind of took it without asking permission, apparently. And he's got the trophy with him. It's in the car. He also had in with him the NBA Finals MVP trophy. And he decided to go to Chick-fil-A. And he posted another video in which some fans recognized him in the car. And he actually let them touch the trophy. One guy just completely freaked out. And he went for 50 chicken nuggets at Chick-fil-A this morning in order to celebrate the victory. So congratulations to Giannis and the Bucks. My tweet aged really well. Before the finals, I said, hey, if Giannis is healthy, hashtag Bucks in six. I don't know if I'm a prophet or the son of a prophet, but there you go. And Lucas, producer Lucas, you kind of have your own Chick-fil-A celebration story, don't you?
Well, Giannis, great call on going to Chick-fil-A. That was also the choice of my destination after a big moment in my life, getting married.
After a big win.
Yeah, it is hilarious. So last May, my wife and I, we got married during COVID, and mm-hmm. we didn't have a big kind of dinner or whatever with a lot of guests, so we went to Chick-fil-A.
That was your wedding dinner?
That was my wedding dinner. And they gave it to us for free, so it was great. Got free Chick-fil-A.
That's incredible. Did Gina show up in the bridal gown and you're in your tuxedo?
Yeah, she did. She was in her wedding dress. I was in my tux.
That would be a great photo, man. That would be a great photo.
Yeah.
The bride and groom, you know, pulling up to the drive-thru in the wedding outfit and getting a bunch of nuggets and chicken sandwiches. You know what? Well, I love that idea. I'm a huge Chick-fil-A fan, so.
They've got the best fries, in my opinion.
You like those waffle fries, huh?
Waffle fries, yeah, they're good.
I love their chicken sandwiches, too. I always ask for extra pickles. And you know what? That certainly beats paying for 600 people to have a full, you know, five-course dinner, Lucas. So you get off easy during the pandemic wedding season. And also, congratulations. I know you recently celebrated your one-year wedding anniversary, so that is awesome. And again, congratulations to Giannis and the Bucks as well. All right. Well, speaking of eating, Jesus told a lot of parables about eating. He talked about measures of flour, and eating and baking figure very large in a new article that was just put out, a little blog post by Dr. Holly Ordway, friend of the program, from the Word on Fire Institute. And she wrote about how looking at the parables in the Gospels, the parables of Jesus, help us to understand how to share the faith. And I found this kind of an interesting take. And obviously, in Matthew's Gospel, it says that Jesus told the crowds all these things in parables. Without a parable, he told them nothing. And that's in Matthew 13:34. And one of the things that Jesus said about the parables was this. He said to his disciples, "To you has been given the secret of the kingdom of God, but for those outside, everything comes in parables." Now, why is that? We're going to get into that in just a second. But some of the parables of Jesus obviously have become so ubiquitous that they found their way into pop culture, the Good Samaritan, and obviously the famous parable of the sower. I never call it that. That's why I kind of hesitated for a second. I call it the parable of the soils, because it's all about the different soils of the heart in which the seed of the gospel tries to take root or not. Well, as Holly Ordway says, this word parable actually comes from an old English word. And the old English word for a parable was bespell. Bespell. Maybe that's where that movie Godspell and that play Godspell got its name from. And the word bespell is sort of a mix of the two words by and a story or a tale or discourse. So by a story, by a story. Now, the word parable got into the English language around the 13th century, and it actually came from the French. And the French got it, not to be too confusing, but the French got it from a Latin word parabola, which means comparison. Now, that Latin term originally came from the Greek word parabole, which means placing side by side. So it's comparing two things, at least two things. So the Latin parabola eventually became the word, literally, in French, the French parler, to speak. So what is this all about? Why am I getting into the etymology of this? Well, as Holly Ordway explains, the word parable is really about communication. It's about communication. And this is why Jesus used parables, because he wanted to communicate some gospel truths in really powerful and thoughtful ways. But they're hard to understand for a lot of, especially for a lot of Jesus' listeners. And we see this in the gospel. Jesus says, "The reason I speak to them in parables is that seeing they do not perceive, and hearing they do not listen, nor do they understand." Now that doesn't seem to make much sense. If Jesus knows they're not quite going to get it, or at least some people aren't going to get it, why does he do this? Well, I want to come back to this, but let's take a closer look, along with Holly Ordway, at what the disciples say when Jesus tells the parable of the sower in Luke's gospel. Well, at the end of the parable, Jesus says, "Let anyone with ears to hear listen." And what happens right after that? It says the disciples asked him what the parable meant. And this is in Luke chapter 8. And then Jesus explains the parable of the sower. This is what it means. Those who are along the rocky ground, there are those who, they hear the word, but the devil comes and snatches it up right away. And nothing happens. Nothing grows. So I think it's kind of fascinating, because in Mark's gospel, it actually says that when they went back in the house, Jesus explains the parable to them. And whose house is it? It's Peter's house. It's Peter's house. So really, it's a metaphor for the church. It's only in the house of Peter, in the church, that we can get the full explanation of Jesus' teachings. And that's another reason to be Catholic right there. So when Jesus is preaching the parables, outside the house, there's a much, much bigger crowd. Huge crowds sometimes, because sometimes even his mother and Jesus' other relatives try to see him and they can't get through because the crowd's too big. And again, that's in Luke chapter 8 as well. So one of the things that Holly Ordway wants to point out is, you know, obviously she's a teacher. She's got a background as a professor. She taught our very own producer, Lucas Holt, when he was studying apologetics. And she says, as a teacher, it's very easy to see sometimes when students get into the habit of being passive. And we all can get into that mode, especially when we don't really have to work too hard to look up information. We can Google anything we want to know in just a matter of nanoseconds. The research, anything we had to do to kind of dig for information, that's kind of been taken away. We just did a recent show a couple days ago on developing the intellectual life, the loving God with your mind. All your mind, all your heart, your soul, and your strength. And so we haven't often had the need to get mental and moral exercise, as Holly Ordway puts it. But preaching in parables it's really a lot of it's for the benefit of the student, because when they were kind of asking themselves, a lot of people in the crowd are probably scratching their heads when Jesus is telling the parable, what does this mean? Even just asking that question, what does this mean? It's taking ownership of it. And so there's a much, much higher likelihood that they're going to be changed by it, that they're going to be able to reflect on it and grow from what they understand. So this is really the lesson about evangelizing, about sharing the faith, that Holly Ordway wants to bring forth. And she says, quote, "I know firsthand it simply doesn't work to just tell students what you want them to know, nor just to assign readings and hope for the best. Students need to be interested in what you're saying before they will pay any attention, let alone make an effort to understand. They need to be motivated. They need to be involved. They need to have some stake in learning what you're offering to teach them. Now, your motivation might be the purely utilitarian one of getting a good grade on the test, but that's a start. That's a start. When we're evangelizing, the motive our audience has for listening to us might not be particularly noble. It might be mere curiosity or even the desire to prove us wrong. And I like what she says there, because the motivation might not be great, but any motivation is a good start. it's kind of like if your only motivation for trying to do good is to avoid hell, the only motivation you have for not sinning is to avoid the punishments of hell. That may not be the greatest motivation, but it's a start. A better motivation might be pure love of God, but you'll get there. You'll get there in time. She goes on to say that, unfortunately, not everybody who hears is going to be interested in asking those questions and learning more. And even when Jesus himself was preaching, there were probably people at the fringes of the crowd who kind of wandered away saying, this isn't really what I was expecting. This isn't what I wanted to hear. He's talking about seeds. What on earth is this about? This has nothing to do with my day-to-day life. That's because, again, their attention was only on that surface level. Free will is super, super important. Conversion and spiritual growth don't happen to us unless we choose it, unless we choose to cooperate with it. And this is really important when we look at the parables of Jesus, because a lot of people, they read the parables, and one of the things that Jesus says in the parable of the sower, at the very end of it, he quotes the book of Isaiah. And this is something that a lot of people, they don't catch right away. A lot of what Jesus is saying comes from Isaiah chapter 6. And this is that famous vision in the temple that Isaiah sees. He says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim. Each had six wings. With two he covered his face. With two he covered his feet. With two he flew. And one called to another and said, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the foundations of the threshold shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke. And I said, this is Isaiah talking, woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphim to me, having in his hand a burning coal, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth and said, behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin forgiven. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Then I said, here am I, send me. So that's a famous passage, here am I, send me. And he said, go and say to this people, hear and hear, but do not understand. See and see, but do not perceive. Make the heart of this people fat and their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their hearts and understand with their hearts and turn and be healed. Now that is really, really important, because this is exactly what Jesus says when he's asked, why do you speak in parables? And he quotes this, so that by hearing they do not understand, by seeing they do not perceive, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn and be forgiven. Now, why wouldn't he want them to be forgiven? Well, he does. But so he's not trying to hide the message, but what the purpose of the parables is that if you're open to doing God's will, you're going to be able to understand the message. That's Jesus' point. If you want to know God, if you want to know the truth, if you want to live the truth and follow the truth, you'll be given insight into it. But if you don't, if your intention is not to do God's will, if you don't want to know the message, if you don't want to hear it, if you don't want to become obedient to it, God's going to let you go your own way. God's going to let you go your own way. And it says actually here, make the heart of this people fat. What does that mean? Basically, it's like fattening them up for the slaughter. You know, have those 50 Chick-fil-A nuggets. Fatten yourself up for the slaughter. This is actually an oracle of judgment. So Isaiah's going to preach to a group of people in the Old Testament that aren't going to listen to him. He's got to send the message. He's got to be sent with the message, but they're going to reject it. That sounds really depressing. But it's not because God is willing this. It's because the people have chosen to reject it. And it's really interesting because at the end of this Isaiah passage, it talks about the holy seed. There's going to be sort of a remnant after this judgment of a stump. He says the holy seed is its stump. And that's the seed of the gospel that Jesus mentions in the parable of the sower. So God definitely gives people free will, and he respects their decision to turn away from him. In a few minutes, I'm going to be sharing with you something about brainwashing. Does God brainwash people? A lot of people ask this question. Is the church trying to brainwash people? No, absolutely not. God respects your free will. So back to Holly Ordway here. She reminds us that God always takes the long view with people's souls. Maybe they don't quite get the parable now, but maybe they will later. She says, we can never make someone engage with the truth, but we should also never assume that walking away from any one interaction is the end of the story. The parable of the two sons is a helpful reminder, and you guys all remember that one. That's the parable where one son says, I will not. He has two sons, this landowner, and he says, hey, sons, go work in the vineyard. And one guy says, no, I'm not going to do it. Not going to do it, Dad. And the other son says, yeah, I'll go. But then he never goes. He's all talk. But then the guy who said, I'm not going to go, he does, and at the end of the day, changes his mind. He comes back and he goes to work. So that's in Matthew chapter 21, by the way. We've got to be patient, Holly Ordway writes. Some of those who seem to pay no attention right now may, in fact, be reflecting on what they have heard, and they might be truly changed by it. So this is a good example that we should never give up on anybody in our life who's not necessarily responsive to the gospel right now. And all of us have someone in our life, whether it's a spouse, a child, a friend, a relative, a neighbor, coworker, who's really not into it right now, despite our best evangelistic efforts. We'll say, hey, check out Relevant Radio. No, thanks. I'd rather listen to this other podcast. It's clearly a bad decision, but people, they can change over time. Keep praying for them. And Holly Ordway kind of closes with this example of baking. I can really relate to this. Not that I bake, but my wife, Trish, has started to bake. She started to bake bread and bagels during the pandemic, and it's been awesome. And her homemade bread is just the best. And this is why Jesus talks about yeast. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed in with 3 measures of flour until all of it was leavened. Matthew chapter 13. You need yeast to make bread, but you also need flour, water, and salt. You got to mix the yeast into the flour. You've got to knead the bread or the mixture, and you got to wait because time is required for the yeast to do its leavening work, as Ordway writes there. And she says, I guess she's baked a little bit too. She says, at first the dough will look disappointing because it's only a fraction of the height of the desired loaf, the way you want it to be. The dough has to be set aside in a warm place. You've got to cover it, got to give it time to rise, don't disturb it. And if all is well, the yeast will eventually do its secret work and produce a lofty loaf, end of quote. And this is what happens with the gospel. And Jesus tells the parable of yeast because of this. This is the gospel will eventually take root under the right conditions in people's life. But it takes time. It takes time in a lot of cases. And Holly Ordway says, yeah, sometimes it doesn't work. The yeast is stale. There's too much salt. The temperature is too cold. It won't rise. Something happens to it. The dough collapses. It's overproofed. Trish is always talking about this, the proof. I have no idea what this is all about, but it falls while you're baking it. But Holly Ordway says a wise baker doesn't blame the bread for not rising. And this is important. When we are looking at our friends and family members, we can't really necessarily blame them. Oh, they just don't want to find God. They have bad will. Maybe we should investigate what's gone wrong. Just like in baking, a baker investigates what's gone wrong, makes adjustments in technique, in the recipe, as you need it. Understand there's outside factors. Somebody might have disturbed it, you know, and that's why it kind of fell down. If you're using the wrong flour, it's not appropriate. You've got to use high gluten bread flour. And so try to fix the problem. Try to figure out what other factors are going on to make it work. And truth doesn't transform lives, she says, unless it's activated, unless it's given form and substance and allowed time to develop. And that's important, too, because it's like the gospel. Putting Jesus' teachings into practice is key. Like baking bread, you've got to give it form and substance. Well, the form and substance comes when we actually try to put it into practice. And Jesus said, hey, if you want to know whether my teaching comes from God, do it, and you'll know. You'll know through experience. The proof of the pudding is in the eating, or the proof of the bread in this case, I guess you could say. So the proper ingredients, as Holly Ordway writes about, practice, prayer, and patience in order to evangelize well. You need the proper ingredients, and that's the gospel, but you also need the proper technique, practice, prayer, and patience. So really well said by Professor Holly Ordway, good friend of the program. And we'll provide a link to this article in the show notes, Lessons in Evangelization, from the Parables. 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. When we come back, does God brainwash people? And I got to tell you a little bit about, there's a lot of talk in our culture about brainwashing. Are politicians doing it? Is social media doing it? Is Mark Zuckerberg trying to brainwash the world? What about Russian bots? Well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the history of brainwashing and whether or not God or the church does it right after this on The Cale Clark Show. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Glad you're with me. 1-888-914-9149 is our toll-free studio line. If you want to call in and react to anything that you've heard today, you can also follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Luke Harrington wrote an interesting piece for the Christ and Pop Culture website about this whole topic of brainwashing, which has become kind of a buzzword in today's culture. Fake news, the fake news phenomenon, the Cambridge Analytica scandal with Facebook, are Russian bots planting ideas in our head? How much is Putin behind this? I don't know. But brainwashing is something that a lot of people are asking questions about. Does God brainwash people? That's an interesting question in itself. We'll look at that in just a second. But I want to tell you a little bit about what we might call the secret history of brainwashing. And Luke Harrington mentions that a lot of people think about the Vietnam War, but another war that United States troops fought in, which really isn't thought of as much or remembered maybe as much as the Vietnam War, was the Korean War. And in the year 1950, the Korean War was raging, and things weren't going great for the United States. A lot of prisoners of war were captured, and one of the things that grabbed a lot of headlines at the time was the rather bizarre behavior of the U.S. prisoners of war, bizarre to us, because POW started confessing to committing all these war crimes. POWs were asking the U.S. government to end the conflict. And in 21 instances at least, U.S. prisoners of war refused to come back to the United States. They did not want to allegedly come back to the United States. Well, what could have made this happen? Why would these American soldiers forsake everything they had fought so hard for? Well, the journalist Edward Hunter came up with the phrase brainwashing. It was all about brainwashing. Now, what did he mean by this? Well, Edward Hunter basically took a little bit of a mix of Cold War paranoia and a bunch of other ingredients, and he said, well, the reason why the American prisoners of war were acting so bizarrely was because the Koreans were using ancient techniques to break the will and turn human beings into mindless puppets who would do whatever the communists wanted them to do. Now, why did he call it brainwashing? We're not really sure, because brainwashing isn't the most obvious phrase that makes sense here. Maybe you should have called it mind control or something like that. But as Luke Harrington says, he probably made a rather literal translation from the Chinese expression Zhi Nao, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Zhi Nao, which means to cleanse the brain. to cleanse the brain, hence brainwashing. At any rate, it's a very striking word that has stuck in people's brains, brainwashing. Well, it turns out that these ancient secrets of brainwashing really weren't that ancient at all, nor were they super secretive. Really, all it was basic torture. Food deprivation, sleep deprivation, forcing somebody to stand for long periods of time, solitary confinement, waterboarding. By the way, waterboarding, it wasn't invented in the Korean War. It actually came from much, much, much earlier, from the Renaissance. The Spanish would use waterboarding techniques. And what studies have found time and time again, that interrogation techniques, sometimes even if they're not torturous, result in false confessions 30% of the time. So even when somebody is not being tortured, if they're being interrogated over a very long period of time, false confessions can be extracted. All right, just let me go. Okay, I did it, even if they didn't do it. So when people are scared for their life, they tend to do what people tell them to do. Now, this is back in the 1950s, and there was a lot of paranoia about communism, the kind of hold that it had in people's lives, McCarthyism, all that sort of stuff. And what the CIA said was, hey, instead of putting an end to brainwashing, maybe we should figure out how to do it. So the CIA started this project called MKUltra, M-K-U-L-T-R-A, MKUltra, which, as Luke Harrington says, probably sounds like a 1990s arcade game. And the CIA tried to figure out how to control people's minds, just like the communists did. But, of course, we would use this power for good. Well, it turns out the CIA didn't really know what they were doing. So they took the throw everything at the wall and see what sticks approach. And unfortunately, many of the things being thrown at the wall were not things, but actually human lives. Harrington says, quote, the CIA recruited everyone from their own operatives to prisoners, prostitutes, and drug addicts. And I'm using the word recruit loosely here, since a lot of this was done without their consent or knowledge. They tried basically everything on them. Sensory deprivation, hypnotism, electroshock therapy, giving people LSD. And the experiments didn't yield anything that anyone would mistake for results. But there's little doubt they resulted in some cool stories being told at the bars after work. End of quote. All right, well, the government, they tried to learn how to brainwash people. It didn't really work. But advertisers just found it incredibly irresistible. They had to try it too. And producer Lucas, you might remember a couple days ago when we were talking about the new taste of Coke Zero Sugar. Remember that?
Yes.
Well, I don't know if you recall the story. Most of us heard this story when we were young. And apparently it's true, that there were subliminal messages that would appear on movie screens, hot buttered popcorn, images of soda pop, that sort of thing. Go get your drink, go get your popcorn. And they weren't ads. They were just little images that would flash on the screen so quickly that you couldn't even really register them. But subliminally, you would get the message. Have you heard about this?
I know, but I'm not surprised. I could see it.
This actually happened. And market researcher James Vickery said, hey, I know how to send snack sales through the roof using mind control. And this happened in the 1950s. The movie that he chose to do this experiment in was appropriately called Picnic, the 1955 movie called Picnic. And he claimed, James Vickery, that he flashed the messages, hungry, eat popcorn, and drink Coca-Cola, whether you're thirsty or not. And he flashed these messages on the screen several times. And again, they passed by way too quickly to register with the conscious mind. But apparently sales of popcorn and Coke went up by 57.8%. And for the Coke, it was 18.1% increase in sales. Not bad. Not bad. And advertisers, he was like, hey, he thought they'd be really excited by this. Now you don't even have to have commercials anymore. You don't have to have 30-second commercials on TV. You can simply control people's minds in the fractions of a second. But he didn't really get the reaction he was looking for. The CIA, they were okay with people controlling minds, but Congress was not. They introduced bills to ban these subliminal advertising messages, and they became law. The FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, banned this practice of subliminal ads in the year 1974. And in its decision, it said, quote, whether effective or not, such broadcasts clearly are intended to be deceptive, end of quote. So they're not legal. They're not allowed. But there's some question whether or not they ever worked in the first place. Apparently, this study with the movie theaters, this guy, James Vickery, this market researcher who allegedly did this, he was accused of falsifying his data. And he actually couldn't even prove in the end that he even did this experiment. Nobody was ever able to duplicate his findings. But there you have it. So it might not even actually work. So at the end of the day, the will is free. So this brings up the question, does God brainwash people? Does God brainwash people? Well, there's a lot of chatter, and Luke Harrington mentions this. What does free will actually mean? Don't want to delve too into this. It's kind of a swampy territory when it comes to philosophy and theology. But here's the thing. God really doesn't want to control people. He does have obviously divine providence, but the very first thing he did after creating man and woman is he gave them a choice. He allowed them to make a choice. And of course, they made the wrong choice. And as Luke Harrington says, if you've ever met a human, you're not surprised by this, that they made the wrong choice. God didn't stop them. So God, if anybody could actually engage in brainwashing, it's the God of the universe. And he didn't do it, which should tell you a little something here. That God doesn't coerce people. And I think that really gets back to the point of the parables, Lucas. This idea that God doesn't want robots. He could have made us as robots, but he didn't, because he wants us to choose to love. And you can really only love if you have free will, right?
Right. You know, actually, as you're saying that, Kale, you mentioned from the very beginning in Genesis, I think a lot of times people read the creation story and they wonder why in the first place God put the tree in the garden. Like, if you didn't want him to eat from the tree, why'd you put it there? But I think that's the point, is he put it there because he wanted to give human beings a choice, because he wanted to create the possibility for genuine love. And yeah, love can only be true, it can only be genuine, if both parties are choosing it, and you can't force it. Otherwise, it's just got a kind of coerced, mm-hmm. I don't know. So, anyways.
Yeah, it's not the kind of marriage that God wants to have with his people. It's not a shotgun wedding in the sense that, you know, I've got a gun to your head, you're going to do this or else. Right. No, he wants it to be free. He simply extends his hand as a gentleman lover, if you will. And this is why C.S. Lewis says, hey, the door to hell is locked from the inside. It's not so much that God sends people to hell. It's that people choose to go there by continually rejecting God again and again and again and again. And so I think that's really important. And yeah, there's all kinds of speculation on why did God not allow them to eat from that particular tree, the knowledge of good and evil. And we talked about this a little bit in our Genesis series on the Faith Explained program. And people can check the podcast from that series. There's a lot of theories that, you know, God would have eventually let them eat from that tree when they were ready for it, when they had matured a little bit. It's an interesting theory, almost like Adam and Eve were almost teenagers in a certain sense, mentally or morally, who knows, that weren't quite capable of making the right decision. I don't know. I don't know about all those theories, but the basic thing is that God expected obedience, and he did give them the option to disobey, just like the devil himself, who tempted them and kind of helped that decision along. He was created to be good, and he chose to reject God, and that's why he became who he is. So yeah, I don't know, Lucas, do you think this has a what do you think about this whole concept with respect to evangelization? Do you think there's a like Holly Ordway says, is there a point to this?
Yeah, well, kind of tying the evangelization point you were making before with the parables and this one, I think it's such an important thing to consider when we're sharing our testimony with people who are not believers. Sometimes it can sound from the listener's perspective like we've been brainwashed. So you can say, well, I wasn't Christian, but then I met this really cool guy on campus, and then I went to this meeting, and then I started learning things, and now I'm a Christian, and it's like,
ooh, you joined a cult.
Okay, yeah, exactly. You joined a cult, or dude, you've just been sold some like weird info. But like, So when we share the faith with others, it's so important to present the faith as like, here are these objective truths that can be ascertained through the reason, through whatever means, and that way it lends more credibility. So it's not just like, oh, I just kind of fell into this group and I've just been told this, so it's got to be true. But no, like, we can use our minds, we can use our hearts, everything, you know.
I love it. That's well said. And hey, everybody, I want to tell you some really exciting news. Obviously, tomorrow, the Tokyo Olympics, assuming they continue, there's a lot of COVID problems over there, kick off tomorrow. And we have a very, very special guest on the Cale Clark Show tomorrow, Dominique Dawes. That's right. Awesome Dawson herself, Olympic gold medalist in gymnastics and a Catholic convert, is going to be joining us on the program tomorrow to show us how to win in the game of life. So join us for the Supernatural Olympics tomorrow on the Cale Clark Show. Lucas Holt produced today. Jake Moore, listen to your calls. And we'll be back. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.